Blog Talk Radio. Welcome to the Shelley Wilson Show. I'm an intuitive medium, a Reiki master, and spiritual teacher. My mission is to assist others on their own journey into consciousness and encourage them to live an authentic life through awareness and empowerment. Coming from a place of respect, truth, integrity, and love, I honor your free will and recognize that you are co-creating your reality with the universe. My intention is to bring understanding, help you to heal from the past, and realize your full potential. I invite you to begin your life in a new way and tap into your inner power as you explore who you really are. Refrain from simply existing and elect to live your life fully without regret. It is time to let go of the past, live in the present, and look to the future, for it is this attitude that will transform you. Today's special guest is Danyon Brinkley. Danyon has appeared on national television and radio shows, including Larry King, Oprah, Dateline, Unsolved Mysteries, Art Bell, George Noory's Coast to Coast AM, the BBC, PAX Network, and many others. A made-for-television movie based on Danyon's bestseller, Saved by the Light, debuted as one of the highest-rated television movies in Fox Television Network history. He's also the author of At Peace in the Light and The Secrets of the Light and is presently writing his new book, 10 Things to Know Before You Go. Danyon's ability to understand and help you achieve empowerment in these wondrous times come from being struck by lightning in 1975 and declared dead for 28 minutes. He's considered a walking miracle, having survived insurmountable odds, including two lightning strikes, open heart surgery, brain surgery, and a massive grand mal seizure. His three near-death experiences have left him with an extraordinary sense of perception. Danyon's website is danyon.com, and I'm delighted to welcome Danyon back to the show today. Hello, Danyon.
Hi, Shelley. Thank you for having me.
Well, thank you for returning. I believe this is the third or fourth time you've joined me on the show, and I always enjoy our conversations because we can just talk about anything.
Yeah, and it's just about where how people see themselves in this world. Why I like being on this show is just listening to your introduction. This is about recapturing people's confidence, power, and belief in themselves in a world that seems to be going crazy, but it's just in transition.
Yes, and sometimes that transition, we don't know which way is up or down, and a lot of people, you know, can use support, assistance, guidance, as well as just peace in their life.
But everything is up. I mean, the down is because we allow this kind of stuff to generate itself, and we are not keeping positive. We're allowing everything else to control us. You know, when you look at media and entertainment, why I like Blog Talk. Mm-hmm. You get a chance to say what you want, and it's not controlled or read. All everybody who does that calls themselves a reporter, all they do now is read a teleprompter.
Yeah.
Just like the president. I've only seen maybe one or two times when it wasn't a teleprompter.
Mm-hmm.
So someone in the back is pulling all the strings. And what are they pulling the strings? To keep us in fear, to perpetuate war. You know, to watch what's occurring from an open mind, and second, follow the money. If you follow the money, you'll see it's deception. And
mm-hmm.
So what makes a show great is trying to remove the deception so that you get a clear choice in a world that's not dictated to you, because we are creating our reality with our belief systems. You know, one thing you learn once you've been dead is that everything that you think is real is not.
Right.
And what you feel about it manifests the reality of it. So
that's
I'm excited
very
to
true.
Be here today.
Yes.
I'm excited.
You know, Well, I'm glad because I'm excited to have you. You're one of my favorite people, I will tell you that.
Thank you.
I always cherish our conversations and your insight and wisdom, because a lot of what you have learned and this ability that you have is from having these near-death experiences and being able to see life from the other side.
Well, and to gain that perspective, number one, no one ever dies. It never happens. And whoever says or tells you that you're going to die, that's a fool talking, or someone trying to put their hand in your pocket. You know, when we live in this mind state, I mean, when I travel around the country, Shelley, I ask people, tell me what you think heaven is. Tell me what do you think happens in heaven? You watch the hesitation.
Mm-hmm.
Very few people have a concept of what they believe heaven is. When you ask them what they think hell is, they have an immediate answer.
Right.
And that answer is usually from the fundamentalist evangelical concept. You know, I grew up in South Carolina. Everybody goes to hell where I come from. And when you listen to hell, you start to realize that it's the same thing Pope Clement II in around 1340. He read Dante's Inferno and decided that that was going to be his description of hell. And now it's become the mainstream concept. So everyone who's listening, what do you think happens when you go to heaven? What do you think? Then second, what do you think when you go to hell? And look how little you know about a place that you plan to spend in eternity.
Right.
I have those rare moments of the glimpses of what it's like to dwell in a divine force and to reconnect my identity into the divine identity of which it is that I'm a part of. And what I hope in each of these shows that I do with you is to give people a few moments to be there themselves.
Well, I definitely recognize, too, that it does provide people an awareness as well as a comfort, because, as you said, many people just don't know. You know, they know what they hear or what the media portrays or a religion portrays or others' thoughts and opinions and things like that, but most people really are very curious about it.
Well, we all have an innate spiritual curiosity because we're all innate spiritual beings. You know, we were arguing the other day. I was talking to a friend of mine, Terry Fader. He won America's Most Talented, and he's the biggest show on the Las Vegas Strip. And he's a very religious-focused guy. And he was talking about friends of his that are atheists, and I started laughing. And he said, "Why are you laughing?" I said, "There's no such thing as an atheist." I said, "There's just no such thing." Psychologically, you have to disavow. In order to disavow the existence of something, you have to first declare that it is. That's
right.
How psychology works. Okay, an agnostic, that's insufficient data to form an opinion. Well, I'm not an agnostic or an atheist. I don't have faith that we are divine spiritual beings. I have a belief system based on being dead for 28 minutes, completely paralyzed for 6 days, partially paralyzed for 7 months, and taken 2 years to learn to walk and feed myself. I had a lot of time drifting in and out of those levels of consciousness over that two-year period to have any other doubt and to realize that I went through open-heart surgery and brain surgery over a 22-year period to reinforce those belief systems about what is. So when I listen to people, I just start laughing. And I'll tell you a conversation I had at breakfast this morning. Because I do readings, people call in, and I help them. And a lady whose son-in-law had committed suicide, and she called me about her daughter, and I was talking to her daughter, and I helped her. Because in the creation of the conversation between the son-in-law or husband who had passed, and she came and they were celebrating the 60th anniversary of one of her sisters, and she was just talking, and she's a big believer in crystals, and mm-hmm. that crystals help. And she says, you know, a lot of people don't believe that crystals are stones affect people. And I'm laughing again. And she says, why are you laughing? I said, listen, what you have to do is a reality check. Where does a crystal come from? And she's thinking. I said, it grows out of dirt. It's a rock that grows out of dirt, first. And I said, second, when anybody says that they don't believe in crystals or the power of crystals, ask them if their car has a radio. And do they believe that that radio works? And she says, well, every car has a radio. I said, right. And I said, does it work? I said, right. I said, well, where do you think the first radio came from? The same little quartz crystal that you're holding in your hand now was shaved down at a certain angle, and two thin plates of metal were put between it. And you tuned it, you spun a little string that tuned or moved those two metal plates to it hit a certain frequency, because you put electrical charge to the plates and you tune it to a certain frequency and you pick up radio waves. I said, the original radio was made out of crystals. So for someone who tells you that crystals don't work and they don't believe in the power of crystals, is a person is telling you that they don't believe that the radio in their car works.
Right.
Okay, then think mm-hmm. this. I mean, that's then it becomes obvious that where they said, well, you know, and they try to argue even more. I said, well, think of this. The computer or the cell phone that you're holding in your hand has computer chips in it. Well, what is a computer chip? It's sand
mm-hmm.
and a silver cord. And based on how that silver is imprinted on its ability to hold heat or reflect heat is how data is stored in it. So sand and silver make up a computer chip. So to not believe that crystals operate, which a transistor is a crystal just manufactured, okay, to not believe that a crystal works means you have to not only believe that your radio doesn't work, you have to believe that your cell phone doesn't work either.
Right.
And then you begin to get into the reality of spiritual consciousness. And you stop and you start to think about it. All we did was create and manufacture on a smaller scale what originally was used.
Mm-hmm.
And then you start to look at that kind of stuff, Shelley, and you begin to realize that so much of we've begun to think about, like X-rays, like gamma rays, we can
mm-hmm.
measure them now. But did they not exist before we could measure them? Sure,
they existed. Yeah.
So we have to reopen up our minds and our hearts to not what we're being told, not what we're listening to what we're being told. But how did that medium come existence? Here's another funny one. Think about this. We don't believe that there is dimensional reality, multiple dimensions, that maybe, you know, the great metaphysical philosophies say we are occupying multiple dimensions. Okay, well, think about this. It's an absolute proven fact that we're multiple dimensional. And how? Tell me how a DVD works. Think about it. You take a DVD, you go and buy it, you stick it in a little slide like a CD, you stick a DVD in your little DVD player, and you cut on your television, and you can watch your favorite movie from 10 years ago. Well, how did that work? If you look at a DVD or a CD, and you put it in the light, it looks like rainbows, different colors. Well, what does those colors represent? The amount of heat that color reflects. So you put your DVD in. How does that machine read the grooves of heat on that piece of plastic? with a laser beam. It shines a light, and it converts a frequency based on the heat of the light passing across it into another electronic frequency that's then transmitted into a series of crystals called transistors that converts it into picture and sound, and you can watch it on your television.
Mm-hmm.
When you begin to look at how the things that we use every day operate, then all of a sudden your spiritual self begins to be aware. I can take out my cell phone. I can take a picture of the lamp in front of me, and I can send it to a friend of mine in Russia in less than 3 seconds. How did that work? How? You convert a picture in pixels into temperature. Then that becomes a signal that's transmitted to a tower, that's transmitted in a different frequency to a satellite back down to a tower in Russia, and to their telephone, and they can see a picture completely without any wires connected to it. And yet we do not believe in our spiritual identity and the things that we use every day that makes our life easier are based on metaphysical principles.
You know, and just the whole idea, when you break it down in that way, it does give one pause to consider it all. And those people that are disbelievers or uncertain, you know, this does makes one pause to reflect on that.
Or figure out how they're going to get rid of all the cell phones in the neighborhood.
Impossible.
Yeah, there's a complete difference between someone who is confused and a disbeliever. A disbeliever is someone who has chosen to ignore reality as it exists around them. That's a disbeliever. And it's really hard. I have a card that sits on the desk that it's impossible to believe how much someone has to disbelieve before they cannot believe in what the reality is that they are seeing. And I always laugh because think of how funny God is. When you look out of your eyes, when you look at your eyes and you see something, when it gets into your brain, it's upside down. Your eyes perceive things upside down, and it doesn't become right side up until the optic nerve and the brain, part of the brain, the cerebellum, that recognizes that image before it turns right side up. Now, that makes me realize how funny the divine world is, because after traveling back and forth over there, Shelley, I had this saying, if it's not funny, it's not spiritual, and if you want to talk to me about God, you're not making me laugh, I don't need to hear it.
That's a good attitude.
I've never seen anything on the other side that didn't represent a humorous side of our perspective on this side. Think about this. We're all afraid of being someplace for eternity, quote unquote, where love is. And we're all afraid of this so-called thing we call death, which is just that the body we quit using stops functioning, and our spiritual self moves into another dimension that we have denoted as heaven. And then when people say hell, when they talk about hell, which is mentioned 8 times in the Bible, and hell is still in the center of the earth. And when you start to think about what people say about hell, and it's in the center of the earth, how can you be a hellish experience in molting lava and magma? Gets to be silly.
Yeah, it doesn't make much sense, but that's...
No, it gets to be silly.
Yeah.
The belief system loses its value. Yeah, and the world's still flat. You know, and all that other stuff we hear.
I know.
We have to open
our eyes. And the whole thing with that, Dan, you know, I was giving a talk a couple weeks ago, and this person wanted to know about authenticity and was focusing on that and wanted to know how someone was authentic. And the way that I interpreted the question was, you know, wanting to know about, you know, were people real and who they were and such. And I said, you know, everything is based on perception in our five senses. And apparently I wasn't answering the question appropriately or how they saw it, but they wanted to know questions to ask to prove how people are authentic. And I said, everyone has their own reality based on their perception.
That's pretty good, but I wish what somebody would ask me that question. Authenticity.
And what would you say? What would you say,
Daniel? I'd ask them, what do they love and why do they love it? Simple. Well, because the only authentic part about us is that we're a great, powerful, and mighty spiritual being with dignity, direction, and purpose. Period. That's who we are before we got here. That's who we are while we're here. That's who we'll be again once we leave here. So the quality of this life is, I always tell a joke, Shelley, about this. I'll say, people say, well, what do you think the meaning of life is? And I said, well, here's what the meaning of life is. You're hanging out in heaven, floating around. You've been down to the cloud bar and had a couple of angel shots. And God slides up next to you and says, hey, Shelley, how are you doing today? And you say, well, I'm doing pretty good, God. And God says, well, Shelley, let me ask you a question. How would you like to be me for a couple of days, like Bruce Almighty? How would you like to be me for a couple of days? And the first thing he says, wow, God, that would be great. I would love to be you. Whoa, I could be you. That means I could be caring and compassionate. I could be loving and forgiving. I could be supportive and protective. I can help people see themselves and their identity and appreciate who they are and know that they're a part of a divine universe. And then God said, wow, that sounds pretty good. And then he says again, well, would you really like to be me for a couple of days? And you'd say, yeah, absolutely. Look at all the good things I could do and achieve if I were you, God. Then you know what happens next, Shelley? You're born. Then all of a sudden, everything that you ever thought about loving, compassionate, caring, protective, bearing, helping people see their own lives and in their own way, you have that opportunity in this life. You get a chance to be everything you hope that God is. So anything that you can imagine that God is, this is that opportunity to be that. We're not fear-based. We're spiritually based. And what happens in fear is it creates a way that you never be able to open your heart because you're always trying to protect or defend your own self. And that's manufactured. These wars, the 60 wars that are going on in the world today, we have to perpetuate war and terror, and we have to perpetuate it. And we have to do that in order to keep people fear-based. But the fact that you are here means that you were chosen, that the divine believes that you are one of those beings that is capable of acting in a godlike nature. And to be caring and protective. That's why we become parents, so that we can take on those characters that and the, all the things that we think that God is. And what have we done? We've become afraid of the devil, and that we are tempted to do things, and then we do things, and then based on that, we're going to hell. So that fear-based nature of both death and now pain have become dominant as opposed to divinity. It's pretty hilarious when you've been dead. When you listen to people, the only thing that is authentic in this reality is what you love and why you love it. So the next time someone asks you the questions to ask someone in their authenticity, what do you love and why do you love it? And then you have a complete approach to the identity of who that person is. And you have also a way to see if it's true by following up on what they said about who they love and why.
Very good.
Yeah, think of this. Think how crazy people, I mean, I don't mean to talk about crazy, but think how funny people are. Think of this. The breath that you breathe in and the breath that you let out are two completely different things. You breathe in air, which is 75% nitrogen, 19% oxygen, and 2% a combination of dust, dirt. But what you breathe out is carbon dioxide. The breath you breathe in and the breath you let out are two completely different things. Completely different. And yet no one ever thinks about that. And like Catherine, my wife, asked me that. She says, you know, because I'm always studying air and I'm always studying breathing and yoga exercises and, you know, deep sea divers. And, you know, it's like this fixation I have. Because I've been in a place when you didn't breathe because I was dead and you didn't breathe. And so I always study it. When you don't pay attention to what you breathe in and what you breathe out are two completely different things. And so where is the spiritual nature of the identity? Is that space in between when you breathe in, everything stops before you can breathe out. So the trouble that most people have is they don't appreciate their breath. And they don't stop and think about that if breathing was not an anatomic exercise, and that means that they didn't have to think about doing it, how precious would each breath be? And can you see air? No. Mm-hmm. But does it sustain your life? Yes.
Yes.
And so there is your
Your divine breath. And, you know, as you're talking about this, Danny, and I'm just thinking because I gave a couple of talks over the weekend, and in my readings I remind people to be conscious of their breathing, especially when they're overwhelmed, to just be mindful of the inhalations, the exhalations. So this is, you know, validation of becoming fully present in your space, in your body. And as you indicated, it's that moment between the breaths, between the inhalations and the exhalations.
Yeah, and realize terror and fear inhibit your breathing duration.
Yes.
You breathe shorter, so you get less oxygen to the brain, less nitrogen into the system, and you become tense because the body's reacting to the lack of nutrition that comes in the air that you breathe. So if you keep everybody afraid and you all news is about what happened bad, then you consciously are holding your breath or slowing your breath down, because when someone's frightened, what happens? They stop breathing.
Yeah.
Well, it won't happen to me, honey.
Because you are aware of your breath.
Yeah, you know, everybody's funny, you know. And I was laughing the other day when they were looking at these beheadings. And I was thinking about, if somebody was going to behead me, what kind of video would that be?
You'd,
I would
probably
be laughing.
Laughing. I know it.
I'd
I can
be laughing.
See it now, dude.
You know, y'all are funny. Have fun. You know, all I want you to do is make sure that I'm laughing. Because why? Everybody should know by now that the Panoramic Life Review, you're going to be every person that you've ever encountered, and you're going to feel the direct results of your interaction between you and everybody that you've ever encountered. So it's going to be amazing when you get to be you cutting off your own head.
Mm.
Now think of how stupid that becomes when you look at it from a reality
right.
point of view.
Right.
And if you look at near-death experiences, everybody who has deep experiences, you know, not the just the out-of-body or astral projection type, they all describe a life review. They see their life pass before them. Well, think about that. There is the point of paying attention. It's not what you do, it's why you do it. And why do they say, why do these terrorists say they're cutting off this person's head? Because they're killing people, and our forces, which none of this is true, are trying to stop them from killing, destroying religion, making people convert, starvation, killing women, babies, and children, everything that the president said at the United Nations today. But look at Libya. We went into Libya and supported Libya. Libya is in utter chaos. People are being killed by the thousands. And what happens? It's easy. Did the oil stop flowing? No. Look at Iraq. All the stuff that's going on in Iraq. Did the oil stop flowing? No. And now we have this thing called ISIL. And ISIL controls part of Syria and Iraq. Did the oil stop flowing? No. So anybody who's wondering what's going on, they just have to go on the internet and look up the New American Century. A paper published in about 98 or 99, and it was Rumsfeld and Cheney and Bush's, all these people, Wolfowitz, and it's called the New American Century, and it names 11 countries that were going to be overtaken. And if you look at all these countries, there's only Syria and Iran that's left. So in all this stuff that we're hearing, has the oil stopped? No. So with all these things that we're talking about, if you do not have a nation under the Geneva Convention and the United Nations laws, if you do not have a nation and it's in disarray, then you don't have to be governed by the Geneva Conventions or the art or the laws under warfare that came about after World War II. And now we're in Syria bombing. Do we pay attention to President Assad? No. What are we doing? We're supposedly protecting people. Well, if you watch television, Shelley, and you see this ISIL commanders, and you see the weapons that they're using and the vehicles that they're driving, they're all American made. And you see tanks and armored personnel carriers. You see Toyotas modified to carry heavy weapons. Those Toyotas were made in Tennessee.
Wow.
And you think, see, people don't get it. And think about this. You think somebody can just get into an armored personnel carrier and crank it up and drive it? Can just sit down in a tank and crank it up? The sophisticated electronics of an armored personnel carrier and of a tank, you have to be trained. You have to be trained in how to operate that piece of machinery. And it's highly technical and highly electronic. And yet supposedly uneducated people, people with no education in their 20s are driving sophisticated American equipment. The trucks were made in Tennessee. The armored vehicles they were made, they're driving, were made in Detroit. Makes it interesting, huh?
Very interesting.
So
yeah.
Who are our enemies? Us. What was that in Pogo years ago? I have met the enemy, and the enemy was me.
Me, yeah.
So they're using our American equipment, made in America, to kill Americans. So who's really controlling the world affairs? And then how did they learn to drive it? How did that happen? And how come no one ever questions that? And then they say, well, they overtook the Iraqi army, left all their equipment and weapons, and they fled. Well, no one taught them how to use it. It's American-made. sophisticated.
Yeah.
Okay? Who taught them how to shoot it? Where'd they learn that from? Only we could teach you how to shoot it.
Right.
So then how come they're so accurate at it? They read it in a manual? Sure. I'm believing that. So when we look at this world that we live in, we can never trust, like, authenticity. We can never trust the story. We can never trust the story that we're being told, because it's just told to mold our belief structure in the rationalizing. I don't hear, but every so often, the fact that they're killing Christians and getting them to convert. They're killing Christians, and that's not a driver. They are mutilating women, raping, capturing women, and selling them into slavery. I don't hear us reacting to that. I hear us reacting to insanity, and the oil still flows.
Yeah. Well, it's definitely selective broadcasting.
Yeah, it's follow the money.
Mm-hmm.
And we didn't didn't defend the schools in Afghanistan and Iraq. When we took on the Taliban, we opened up schools. The Taliban would invade those schools and shoot people in the face and in the head, little girls, because men are basically afraid of women. Did we stand up for that? No. And I was watching a report the other day that we are supplying Afghanistan with equipment till 2017, generators and equipment under our contract. We deliver the stuff off of the boat. It comes off of the boat. They filmed all of this.
Wow.
It comes off of the boat. It's parked on the dock. Someone comes along and knocks a hole in the exhaust system and then declares it junk. And then the brand new piece of equipment with the hole in the exhaust system, a new truck, a new generator, a new pump for water, it's put on a truck and taken to a junkyard. And then a new one is ordered because that one is considered defective. And they're mm-hmm. taking them apart and selling the parts all over the Middle East to as spare parts to equipment that other countries have bought that was made in America. And I watched this. And we know that this is happening. The government knows that this contract is being enforced and happening. And what do we do about it? Nothing. And then you look at the government. I mean, this stuff just amazes me. You look at what the government says of the monies that's unaccounted for. There is $58 billion cannot be found that was appropriated by the Congress, spent by the Pentagon, and it can't be found. And Donald Rumsfeld said in 2011, the day before 9/11, he said that as he came in as the Secretary of Defense, they can't find $2 trillion. Today they can't find $5 trillion. Now, you know what, Shelley? There is a point where the reality that we've lived in and the world that we've become accustomed to is allowing us to delude ourselves into believing what we would give up to keep our physical self safe instead of our spiritual selves evolving. And this is my crisis with us as Americans. We must unfold our spiritual self. We must not so much be afraid of defending our physical self. Because it's going to be really exciting when in 2015 when the Affordable Health Care Act kicks in what's called Cadillac policies. You know, the big insurance, fully covered insurance
mm-hmm.
policies. They disappear in 2015. They're gone. So everybody's going to be exactly what we saw happen with the VAs, where the VA is, and what happened with the VA is exactly what's going to happen to affordable health care. The waiting list, the times, who you get to see, when you're going to get to see it. And we must prepare our spiritual selves to deal with this. I am an old combat Marine, and yet 44% of all the homeless in America are veterans, and 14% of that 44% are combat females, women who served in the armed services, who are now homeless. And yet we can bring and allow, and I'm not against, I'm not a big border person, but we can house hundreds of thousands, probably millions, of people coming across the border, but we can't house and feed our veterans. We know who they are. We know who they are. We know they're Americans. We know they served in the United States military. We know that they're homeless. And yet we can find a place to house people who are illegally entering this country, but we cannot find a place to hide, and I mean to put up or to house people who have served this country. There is where we're failing to identify our spiritual identity in the world that we live in, and that we allow this. We're even building hotels and renovating hotels to shelter people coming across the border, when in the same town a block away are homeless veterans. That, at that point, I start to really laugh. I mean, I hate to say it, but if we are allowing this to be the reality that we're living in, whatever happens to us, we deserve it.
Yes, it definitely gives one to pause and think about everything. And I know, Daniel, we talked a little bit before we went live about the work that you're doing now and researching locations to get the centers opening.
Well, this was the last thing in the, you know, they sent me back for two reasons. It's all in Chapter 5 in Saved by the Light, Shelley. You know, a book that I wrote 20 years ago. And I put out what I call the boxes of knowledge, the border crossings that we would have to put military on the southern border, and they would be coming from El Salvador, Nicaragua, Guatemala. I didn't say Mexico, I said specifically. And this mm-hmm. is something that I said that was really funny way back then, the collapse of the Soviet Union. But I wrote in a book 20 years ago that the economic stability of the world would, as Russia goes, so shall go the world. And right now we have BRAC. We have Brazil, Russia, India, China, and South Africa. And they are creating a parallel economic system to the dollar, which has been that way since 1946 under the petrodollar and the reserve currency of the world. And the Russians are leading the way. But I was supposed to establish something called spiritualistic capitalism. And what it was is I sold books and began to speak so that I could fund the Twilight Brigade, which is now one of the largest end-of-life care volunteer programs for dying veterans in American history. And the second was centers, an 8-step program, so people who were dealing with loss, facing transition, not death, but facing transition, which I don't think death ever happens, and that they could begin to experience it, that they could come through a program that would allow them to escape that body and see what I saw. And to be able to take that, and people who are grieving loss, you know, especially parents who lose children, that they could come and enter a place where they could make a connection with that departed loved one. So now I have finished Spiritualist of Capitalism. The Twilight Brigade is in place. And now comes this final part. And Catherine and I are looking for those perfect places. And it's a feeling more than it is anything else to put these programs in place. Mm-hmm. I have had these programs in every house I own. I have a room that has these components. I use mostly four, but it's really six components. But I've had them in this house, in every house I live in, because sometimes I cannot escape my physical self. I'm pretty good at being able to get out of my body. But sometimes when I need information and I can't quite, maybe I don't have enough vitamins or trace minerals in my system, then I'll use these programs. So the final stages of my life experience since 1975 is what I'm working on now.
Wow. That's awesome. And, you know, it just feels like the time is right, doesn't it?
Well, they said 2014. I've been ready since 91. Anybody who goes on, if you go on YouTube and you look up Joan Rivers, Danion Brinkley, Part 5, because in 1991, Raymond and I, Dr. Moody, was on Joan Rivers' mm-hmm. show, and she came to Raymond's when we were doing these early programs, okay, and Joan Rivers, you know, she was just being Joan Rivers. I didn't particularly see anything wrong with that personality. But Joan Rivers just didn't believe it. So she came to Raymond's, and she went through the program, and anyone can watch her. After she went through the program of her describing watching herself float above her body, meeting her husband, who had committed suicide, and then traveling. We were in Alabama then. And then going to California and seeing her daughter taking a shower and describing all the clothes that her daughter had laid out on her bed that she was going to wear. And then when she was describing it, we said, well, let's call Melissa. She called Melissa from Alabama, and Melissa described exactly what Joan Rivers had described when she came through the program. The dress, the belt, all this is, you can see it on YouTube. So at a certain point when Melissa finds us, gets through this part, because they loved each other very much, I'll contact Melissa and we'll take her through the program.
Yeah.
And then we'll see. So from 1991, I've been ready since 87. I've had this ready since 87. I've advanced it more because of the advancements in technology and electronics.
Mm-hmm.
But now what happens if Joan Rivers went through it and then Melissa can contact her? Wonder where we are then in the reality of if there's a life after death.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, and it's, you know, wonderful. And you know, even in my own work, and it seems like the readings that I've been doing, even more so in the last few weeks, of the information coming through and, you know, people wanting proof, needing proof. And, you know, even though proof is being provided, they still want more proof to just make sure that it is really connecting with their loved ones.
Okay, but what you have to do is ask them, what is that establishing?
I know.
Okay, because of course
I agree,
you know,
and I just have patience when that happens, and I just breathe and be conscious of the breath.
Yeah, but you see, that's a reality. When people do that, I mean, I watch this all the time, but when you mess with me, the water gets really deep. You know, I've been at this so long that the other side is not a place far away to me. It's not abstract to me because I've made that journey 20 times, probably more than 20 times, but authentically, 3 times I've gone there. I mean, I'm like, I have more quote-unquote dead friends than I have living friends. And so I don't have a problem about it. But what you have to do is, as they're questioning you, you have to question them. what are they trying to prove to themselves?
Right.
Okay.
That's good.
Yeah, what are you trying to prove to yourself? Because if they're searching you for authenticity about connection to a loved one or a reading that's benefiting them about where their life is, okay,
mm-hmm.
then rejection of the information is usually their inability to change once they receive it. Because once they have that information, they begin to try to disavow it because it's forcing them to have to change the paradigm that they're living in. I'm used to it. I've been here 64 years, and I've been over half my life. I've been a hospice volunteer for 37 years. I have more than 32,000 hours at the bedside, and I've been with 2,009 people going from this world to the next, and close to 300 taking their last breath. So when I listen to people, I have a deep heritage of information to draw from based on not what people do, but why they do it.
Very good.
People always, mm-hmm. you know, the thing I always leave people with this. At the end of each day, how many times have you created a way to say you're welcome? And if you have 10 you're welcomes, you've had a good day. No matter if they cut off one of your feet, you had a good day. Because the more times you can say thank you is power. But the
yeah.
more times you have created a reality that you can say you're welcome, then you have begun to be who you truly are. It's not what you do, it's why you do it.
Yeah. I love that. And everything truly is about intention, isn't it? Are we staying in that place of love, or are we hovering in fear mode?
Or do we open up each day and close each day with gratitude? What mm-hmm. In all this horrible stuff that's going on and all of that, what am I thankful for? Because that's what changes the world, what you're grateful for. When I open up a session, I and this is what I do every time, Shelly. Take a deep breath. And then I take another deep breath. Let it all go and hold it and let it go. Now tell me what you are the most grateful for thus far today. And then I always say that I'm the most thankful for them and air. Because when you start any session with gratitude, and I close each session with gratitude, because once you count your blessings, and once you look at everything, no matter how good or how bad it is, with what you're thankful for, gratitude and forgiveness are the greatest powers that we possess. The ability to be thankful and the ability to create the art of being grateful and the ability to forgive yourself more than anything else, but to forgive you. And based on that, creating a system that doesn't allow you to make that same kind of mistake again. But gratitude guides you. Being
yeah.
thankful guides you. Being afraid only stagnates you and keeps you afraid and makes you dependent on other people to save you from something you've allowed to be created.
I totally agree, and I just gave a talk a couple of days ago at the Center for Spiritual Living, and my talk was gratitude. So it is very important, and, you know, I just have to mention briefly, Danya, and I am very grateful for you. I'm grateful for your words of wisdom, and every time that you choose to share conversation with me here.
Well, I have watched you from when you was a little girl, Shelley. I mean, I go back to Dolores. I mean, you were just a little kid,
uh-huh.
you
yes,
know, and
well.
You've grown so much, so deeply spiritually. Your books are really good, and then
Thank you
began to express this in yourself on the air so you can get to more people. So I have a certain sense of pride that to watch people unfold and to watch you know, the family begin to, whether they like it or not, they have to embrace the Shelley that's come forth. And I can remember just conversations like your husband and how, whether they liked it or not, this is who you were going to be and
yeah.
how you've evolved. So for everyone that's listening, there's always hope for each and every one of us to begin to find our way and to not let anything distract us. So it's always a privilege and a pleasure to travel the distance with someone. I didn't ask to become me. You know, I wasn't gifted at birth, or I didn't develop these skills. One day I never believed any of this. I thought it was hogwash. The next day I was dead. And
yeah.
the day after that, I became everything I never believed. So I went from, there is no such thing as any of this, to how in the world does it work? So I'm luckier in some ways than most people, Shelley, because I didn't have to wonder if it was. I had to wonder how it worked.
Yes. Well, I will tell you that, you know, the fears that I had about putting out the story, my story, Journey into Consciousness, it definitely erupted a lot of emotions, especially within my mother, and our relationship has been pretty much null and void since it came out, because her perception of it was that I was a liar, delusional, and have a mental illness, and my perception is all wrong. So this has been one of standing in my power and feeling comfortable with my truth and my authenticity.
Yeah. So when everybody asks you, what questions do you ask to know that a person is authentic, tell them to call your mother.
There. yeah.
Tell them she's got a down pat. You know, think about
yeah.
this. I had a near-death experience when it didn't have a name. You know, nobody ever even heard of that stuff. And I didn't have a choice. I had to deal with it. So tell them they just need to call your mother, and she'll give them all the answers they need.
Yes, from her viewpoint, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, then they'll get to see how authentic you really are. I mean, you know, if you're looking for authenticity, go talk to my mom. Yeah, then you get a dose. Then they'll see.
They laugh. Yes, my.
And you know, then they'll see how really sane they are, as opposed to what you came up in. You know, people. See how you laugh. See, everything's funny to me.
It is.
I mean, I am thankful. I can't stand to see hypocrisy. I can't stand it, and it drives me nuts when I see it. When I see the delusional rationalization that we as a country are allowing to be perpetuated on us, and the fact that it's leading to a collapse, that the only person that's going to be at fault is us. We're going to realize somehow they're going to make it our fault. And when, you know, when George Bush used to say, they hate us because of our lifestyle and because of who we are. No, they didn't. They hate us because we were supporting dictators so that we could get oil really cheap. And look at Gaddafi. He was raping children and murdering, and his sons were riding up down the road picking up people and beating them and shooting them and all of this kind of stuff. And it's that our lifestyle has created the kind of lifestyle that is perpetuated pain, anguish, and suffering. That's the point. You know, when
yeah.
you look at that kind of stuff, you have to really look. I mean, you have to really take a good look at yourself and look at what you're believing in and what are you thankful for. We as the United States, we gave up our industrial economic base so we could buy cheap stuff on credit. How stupid can that be?
I completely
agree.
And now all the major
corporations are moving out of America because we have the highest corporate taxes, so they can pay less taxes and then come in as a foreign corporation, which means they don't have to pay the taxes, and it's still an American company. They just bypass the laws. That's crazy.
crazy and pretty funny when we just take a moment and pause.
That's what
well,
I Danian, think.
Yeah, I agree with you. Thank
Danian
you once again.
Danian.com, and I love you, Shelley. Be blessed, be safe.
I love you too.
And tell your mom that I am sincerely thankful for anything I've done to contribute to making you exactly who she doesn't know who you are, but who she thinks you are.
Yeah, I will.
Hugs and
I will
kisses
pass that
to
on.
You.
Thank you.
Hugs and kisses to you and your entire audience.
Thank you, Danian. I look forward to your book coming out, 10 Things to Know Before You Go. And once again, listeners, Danian.com. Thank you, Danian.
All right. Love you, Shelley.
Love
Bye.
You, too. Bye-bye. Okay, listeners, this concludes today's segment of The Shelley Wilson Show. Until next time, remember, this is your time. I encourage you to live an authentic life, be the best you can be, and love yourself in the process. Much love and many blessings to each of you.